All right, welcome back, everyone. Again, of course, you guys know this is Charles Dudley here with Sean Decker in the studios today talking about numbers. And that last session was pretty impactful. We just finished up talking the numbers game. And I had a question. I don't know if everybody else did, but Sean, tell us what you meant about that 1 second.
Well, remember we were talking about the penny doubling every day for 30 days. And us not valuing the penny properly. So the next question is how do we value the second? And we're going to get into that in so much more detail on the time side of things, but your decisions are made on a second-to-second basis that affect a day-by-day, year-by-year, and decade-by-decade overall expectation of your dreams, your future, and those kind of things. So it's that 1 second that multiplies by making sure that you value your every second. Well, that being said, we're going to jump on to the next side of it, is abstraction method. We have talked about that in some great length on the knowledge side of it, but remember, it's when things are removed. So remember on the priorities, number one is always number one, and it can only be one all the time. There is only one one. So the question is when you take everything else from underneath it, what is your one one? And that's where lots of times when you start taking away all the influences, all the side thoughts, all the preconceptions, prejudgments, you take away your biased opinion, and you really put some solid numbers to what you believe. Once you've done that, you get to see again that abstraction, what is left? What's really there? And that number really put some validity to what you really believe. And so that leads us into our next topic, which is cost versus value. Now, this we had talked about on the knowledge side. There's a difference between something costing you something and how much it will actually bring back to you based off the principles of substitution and marketable value and all those kind of things. So there's a separation between the two. So there are certain things that will cost you, but the number one thing of anything that costs you is misplaced resources. The number one problem you have had in your life is not the cost of something, but the cost of that it's misplaced. You had something of some value, but then you misplaced it, and so now what you did have, you don't have, but you still need it, but it's not available to you anymore because you no longer have it available to you. So if you never lost any of your time, never misplaced it, what could you have accomplished? See, let's value the knowledge, value the numbers, value the people, value the time, value the influence. So if you never lost any influence, how much would you have now if you never lost any? If you had never lost any of your time, how much time would you have now? If you had all the people in your relationships that you should have, how many people would you have in your life that you don't have anymore because you devalued or misplaced that resource? And this is such a vital thing, is knowledge by itself does not help. It is knowledge with the ability to recall that is knowledge, and that is what actually helps. So I can go learn every book in the world, but if I can't recall it when I need it, it never helps me. See, this is where sometimes we learn something, and I love people, you know, and I said this, and this is going to sound super, super harsh, especially after I say who I said it to. But I was talking to my mom and the other day, and I was talking to her, and she had bought like 4 or 5 books. And you, guys, you really have to remember, I have no filter at certain points in my life. And I will apologize in advance when I say this. I love my mom. We have a great relationship, so don't think I'm a horrible son. I do many things to take care of my mom because I love her. But when I said this, I kind of thought about it after I said it. But I was talking to my mom. She had bought several books. And I said, Mom, how many of them books did you buy? Oh, well, I bought 5 books. I said, how many books do you read? She said, well, I probably read 1 to 2 books every week. Every week. Yeah. Wow. I said, and you've been doing that for 30 years. She said, yeah. So that's a lot of knowledge. She said, yeah. And this is where the statement that I probably need to repent over. But I said, it amazes me how you can know so much and have done so little with it. Now, that's a harsh statement. And she went, ouch. So again, it was a harsh statement. But see, we're talking about valuing things, right? So if you're going to read a book every week, do you even value the book you read? And this was the statement I made to my mom. I said, Mom, you have the knowledge, ability, and tenacity to run a billion-dollar company, and you're working for $8 an hour. She said, no, it's 12. I said, you're better than that. See, here's the thing. We read all these books. We have this knowledge. We have all this knowledge. But we never recall it to work for our ability. So it's a misplaced resource. So lots of times we have these things available. They're available in people that we don't like. They're a resource, but you don't like them, so you won't have any relationship with them because they won't tell you what you want to hear, and so you let them go away, and so you lose your resource because you won't value the person because they don't have the A personality you like. And this is where lots of times people, businesses, and etc. get in trouble. For example, you taught about AOL. Lost to making way for internet and all these other things. And well, we don't want to do it that way. And the telecommunication thing, the difference between the cell phone and the landline, you know, or how about the horse and the car? Right? Why? Somebody didn't listen to somebody. See, innovative ideas are usually not because they're only with one person. It's that you were with someone when it happened and the other person didn't value you. And so you decided to go on your own and do it anyway, and so you misplaced a resource that was available to you. Because you want to contradict or be mean or be hateful or whatever the case is. And here's some basic resources. Time is a resource. Money is a resource. Relationship is a resource. Or people. Knowledge is a resource. Money is a resource. And I made the comment in the last one. Money is a tool. So you could actually put it this way. Time is a tool. Relationships is a tool. Do not misuse your battery you have in your Jira. Building a bridge that's not headed towards your destination. Anthony Robbins, in a video, talked about resourcefulness in his video. And many people, and one of the things he addresses in that video is that many people act like the resources are not available. That's the lie. It's not that they're not available. It's that you didn't bother to decide that they were available to you. Because you misplaced what you had. What, you didn't have any time? You didn't know anybody? Well, you couldn't make 1,000 phone calls? See, lots of times when you talk to, for example, we use KFC. He's 80 years old. Had given up, failed on God knows how many businesses, etc. And he decided, the last thing I'm going to do with my life is sell this. And made KFC. Multi-billion dollar company. Why? He learned not to misplace a resource which was a chicken recipe. All he had was one really good recipe that he didn't misplace. How many times that we had ideas that we look 5-10 years later and we see someone else made it? Why? Because that resource wasn't available to us? It was available to them, which makes it available to you. The question is, did you do what they did to get to it? Did you value your idea like they valued their idea? So it's not a matter of, does this work? It's why is it not working for you? Or why is it working for you, and how can you make it work for you even better? I picked up a guy the other day. He was walking down the side of the road, and I realized he didn't have a car. He looked like he was in a hurry. It was a really hot day. And so I picked the man up, and I said, hey, I said, can I give you a ride? He said, absolutely. I said, where are you going? He said, I just need to go to Kmart. He said, I need to work out some child support issues. They took my license. They took my car. I said, okay. And so I drive him over to Kmart, and I said, I just got to ask you one question. See, because I knew I was doing this seminar stuff. I said, I got to ask you one question. What's the number one thing you attribute yourself to not being able to deal with this? He said, well, I ain't got a car. I said, okay. Is that the number one thing? He said, well, I just don't have the money. I said, so you would say that's the number one problem? He said, absolutely. He said, because if I had enough money to pay my child support, then they would give me my license back, which then I could keep my job, he said, to make me paying the child support. I said, so you think money is your problem? He said, yes. I said, so that means that you believe that you have to have money to make money. And 90% of America has this belief, that it takes money to make money. And so here's just a simple thought, and this is what I told him. I said, so you can go on, I said, have you ever been to Sam's? He said, yeah. I said, you ever been to Walmart? He said, yeah. I said, how about Kroger? He said, yeah. I said, how about Kmart? Yeah. I said, you know, you can buy stuff online from those stores and then sell it online for more, and people will pay you for it. I said, you can make money on the spread. Every business operates this way. They buy from a wholesaler, and they sell it for retail. 90% of all American companies work this way. Real simple concept. But the question is, why aren't you doing it? See, you have the assumption that you have to have money to sell something. That's not true. You have to have something to sell. Doesn't have to be yours. He said, I never thought about that. I said, you can go online, I said, and find items, list them for sale, make money on the spread, and if you do that 1,000 times, you can sell them every single month for the rest of your life, and that'll make up the $100 to $200 difference a month. Dude, I never thought about that. What was the problem? Misplaced resource. He never acknowledged that all these other companies were a resource to him. What? You think that when Walmart or Kroger or any other gas station shows up to you, that it's not a resource available to you? Or did you just never bother to think that it was a resource to you? I mean, there's companies right now that you can order your grocery bill from whatever restaurant or whatever grocery store, and another guy will go pick it up, and then they charge you $50 to deliver it to your house. Well, he doesn't do anything. His resource is a car. He don't own all that. They paid him in advance to go pick it up. What did he own? He owns nothing but the car. Well, you could have a bike and do that. Might make it a little hard on the ice cream on the way there, but nonetheless, it's a resource available to you. And I didn't look up the particular statistic, but here's a thought for you, is how many people want to own a home? It's the American dream, you know, the yellow two-story colonial with a white picket fence with 2.5 children. It's the American dream. So if you don't own a home, how many of you, or if you want to, I think the statistic is 70% or 80% want to own a home. It's pretty high, but only like 30% actually do. So of the 30% that do own a home, and again, I don't remember them particular numbers, but of the 30% that own a home, how many of you would like to never waste any money on your home? And so, because see again, if we misplace a resource, then we have lost that resource lots of times. So if I place it over here in this jar, then it usually goes away because it is absorbed into that situation, whatever that situation is. So we're going to use some real estate things real quick. And it says the average renovation project, and this was through a particular website, cost versus value, and I'm not trying to assume any of their information. This is through Haleywood Media Incorporated. And so this is not to take away from any of their information at all, but just to use it in comparison, I think they have done the best job of any person at some of this information. But they look at the job costs, resale value, cost to do the renovation, and then they do it in like Chattanooga, East South Central, and then the national average. Okay, so they give you some different percentages on how the difference between what it actually costs you and what it brings to you marketably. Well, only like three items actually had a return on investment. It was a backup generator and a front door, I think, were the two items that had a typical return on investment. So every other renovation project you do to your house has usually a automatic 20% loss in value. So if you spend $10,000, at best you can get $8,000 out of it. At best. So you have misplaced $2,000 automatically. Now, again, we had brought this up at one point, but the difference between bringing a property to market value and forcing market value. And forced value is to bring a property from a liquidation value all the way up to a market value. And so there's usually a gap, and that's where you have an entrepreneurial profit. And so don't confuse this. But if you own the home and you know that a project is only going to save you, or that each project usually has a minimum cost between $36,000 and $120,000 per project, and you know that it doesn't have that automatic 20% savings, then you can say, okay, well, when I do this project, I'm going to have to assume that, again, that $10,000, out of that $10,000, that $2,000 I'm just losing. So if I can minimize that $2,000 to say only $1,000, and so I can do the project for 9 instead of 10, then I have not misplaced $1,000. And so one of the particular ones I like, and contractors may hate me for this, but contractors will have a tendency to tell the homeowner, oh, well, if you put a new deck on that, it'll increase the value of your home $5,000. Almost always, that's a lie. Because people don't buy a house for the deck. They buy the house and they'll put a deck on it if they don't like the deck. because a deck is not why people buy the house. It can have a use, again, value in use, but it's almost never the cost, and so therefore you waste money. And so let's destroy all perceptions that the renovation that you're having a contractor do equals the value it's going to add to the property. This will drastically change every renovation project you will ever do the second you realize that just because it costs 10 grand does not mean it's going to add 10,000 to my house. So you will negotiate differently because the false perception is gone. And so, again, that goes back to the concept of in-ground pool, value and use. Pool costs $50,000 to put it in. You're going to get between $10,000 and $25,000 marketably out of it, not because people don't appreciate how much it costs, but because they're only paying you for the use of it. The gold on the roof. You can have a 24-karat gold roof on the house. It doesn't make the house worth $2 million. It means that you devalue the use of the gold based on how you used it. You could take that same gold, peel it off the roof, turn it into jewelry, and now all of a sudden you have $5 million of jewelry on the roof.
One thing that's interesting, Sean, and I know we've both got some experience in the real estate world, but you can over-improve it to a detriment, where if you approved it to what was normal or typical or maybe a little bit better than average, you can get the optimal return. If you over-improved it, you actually can get less out of it than the use, because the perceived maintenance and repair and functionality, all the different things, you know, somebody might say, that's your taste, it's not my taste. Or, I don't want to spend $10,000 on a square foot of replacing my gold roof when, you know, it gets weathered or whatever. So I think that's another thing for people to realize. It's not just that personal taste. Kind of like your guy, he had a $200,000 home, but multi-million-dollar hangar with Corvettes in it. And he didn't even care that you included it in the appraisal. So the concept there is he knew. He was aware. This is my personal preference. This is my taste. This is for my value, my entertainment, not for anybody else's. So I think that's one thing for people to realize on this is there is a maximum amount you're going to get out of it, and then you can actually over-improve it until you're going backwards.
Well, in the last session, we brought up the real estate property of a $150,000 house. The market value is $150,000 for the property. But if you buy it for $110,000 and you need to bring it up and it costs $50,000, then that means you have $160,000 in the house. That means that you just lost $10,000. See, again, a misplaced resource. So in order to bring it up to that standard, you have to be able to do it for $40,000 or less in order to get return on your investment, because the neighborhood only supports $150,000 for that type of property. So that was the analogy, again, back in your knowledge section. So please revisit that section if you still have some general questions. On this next part, the next one I want to get into is right after I kind of finish up cost, is that so once you understand that cost is a number, it's a raw number, it's always raw, don't try to make it an emotional, don't make it all these other things. In other words, cost has a specific value parameter set to it. It's always that. So if I'm going to go mail a bunch of letters to a bunch of potential clients, so those numbers are very simple. The cost might be 44 cents with the stamp, 20 cents for the envelope, 20 cents to print the thing, and so I end up with a total cost in that letter of $1 to mail out. So my cost is $1. You know, time you include all the factors of an employee sending and all that other stuff. So that's $1. That's so easy. Restaurants deal with this all the time. My food cost is blank. well, then my employees or their salaries are blank. See, that's just cost. It's simple. Now, the value side of that is when I send that letter out, my conversion rate on that letter, which that's a whole marketing thing. You learn how to increase your conversion based on pictures, colors, photos, drip campaigns, which colors have the best marketable approach and value, what they mean psychologically, the whole approach to that, staging properties, the cost versus value of food. A steak might cost you $2.50, but you can always get it for, $20 and sell it just because you marinated it for a week or, whatever the case. So each one of them have a cost and then a marketable value. The cost is always a raw number. In other words, it's going to cost me this every time. Now, you have certain things such as foods, dairies, products, et cetera, that have variable costs, and so they'll change. And so what you do is you always estimate on the high end of your cost, and you run your business as if the cost is there, and then you hope that you can get it for the 50 cents or a dollar less per pound, and then that's where you make your margin higher. Again, most companies, they run off of 3% margins. And so if I can increase my margin by 3 to 5%, then I change my value, and so then, therefore, I can change my company and et cetera. And companies, large companies live off of this perspective of minuscule margins. If I can just earn 2 pennies for every product we sell on a national average, and then I can increase that by 1 penny, I can exponentially increase my income a year. And a lot of companies go off of the penny principle. And so, again, because, see, they understand that if they can double a penny every day for 30 days, that they get $10 million too. So the question is are you valuing your penny? And so one of the analysis in this, and we're going to kind of get in the next section, is called linear computation. It's a particular tool that they use to do this called a regression analysis chart. There's only one problem with a true regression analysis chart. You have to set the parameters. So if your regression analysis chart is off, then what tends to happen is that your entire chart is off. And so in real estate, this is especially useful in determining overall market values based off of land size. And so like in the top left-hand corner of a L-shaped graph, you would have a curve from the high left down to the bottom right, and you'd have a slight curve. So the smaller the lot, say 0.1 to 100 acres over to your right-hand side on the bottom side, so you got a 0.1 acre lot, but it's worth $120,000 an acre versus a 100 acre parcel might only be worth $2,500 an acre. Okay? So that's based off of a principle called regression analysis. And that's where your factors come in, such as location. Seeing that's part of the knowledge side. So location is, and we're really going to get onto this stuff in influences, so please stay tuned with us, guys. But on the influence side, or on the location side, you have on the left side, price versus value, and then on the bottom is size versus quantity. So some of these factors is in people is race is not an actual factor. See, a lot of people think that, well, if it's black, white, Mexican, whatever the case is, that it's going to affect my values in real estate. And this is what I've learned. I've done them all over the state of Virginia. We covered the whole state, and this is what I learned about the whole side of, well, that's a bad neighborhood versus a good neighborhood. That's all a lie. It's not about is it a good neighborhood versus a bad neighborhood. It's what's the cultural belief system in that neighborhood. If I think it's okay to walk down the road and shoot people, the neighborhood's value systems are lower, and so therefore it affects economically around it. So the second I want to change a neighborhood, if I can change the culture, the value of the neighborhood will change. And so this is how you can change value. If you understand what the influential factors are of the area, then you can change it. But if you don't know what the influential factors are, you don't know what kind of, you know, again, let's go back to the thing. What's their knowledge? How much are they making? What's their numbers? What type of people are they hanging out with? Remember I made the comment, the five people that you hang out with, you'll make $5,000 within 5 years. What kind of people are they hanging out with? Why? Because they're their neighbors. You think they don't have a impact? Because they're their neighbors. They know the same thing. They'll talk to each other. That's why wealthy people want to live with wealthy people, is because wealthy people know that they have an understanding of each other that maybe other people don't have. And so they tend to hang around each other because they also understand the influence of the people around them. Well, they're going to have a different time schedule. They're going to have different influential factors. And so, and it's not limited to any particular race. And so that's actually not the issue. One of the core issues I've known as a cultural belief or problem is entitlement. And the entitlement is I value what you have and I don't value what I have. That's the whole problem with entitlement. In other words, you have something I value more than what I have. Because see, you owe me something that I don't have. So what, you don't have a brain? You don't have any knowledge. What, you can't go to your local library and I can? So I owe you something. I don't owe you anything. What, I make more money than you? How did I make more money? Because I had a better opportunity? That's not true either. I have more time. I have the same 24 hours in a day as you do. I had different people in my life. You can't put different people in your life? You can't decide to go to a different place. Matter of fact, if you look at a lot of successful people, one of the first things you'll find out is that they usually left everything they knew and had and went somewhere completely different. So they changed what they knew, they changed who they hung with, they changed where they spent their time and what their influential factors are. 80% of successful people did this. And then because they did that, their numbers changed. Lots of times their numbers stood crap for maybe some time. They didn't make a lot of money. They didn't have a lot of things. Why? Because one of the comments I make about money is a byproduct of doing things well. So you get paid in proportion to the problem you can fix. That's a comment that Mike Murdoch made. So if you're not fixing a problem, then that's what you're getting paid in proportion to. For example, if I need a secretary is $8 to $12 an hour. Why? Because they're not fixing much of a problem. But when you become a real estate appraiser, you make between $30,000 and $70,000, $100,000 a year. Why? You're fixing a different problem. And the more volume of people that can fix the same problem, the less influential you are. Because really, you're not really able to fix a problem that a bunch of other people can't fix. And so, when I've got 30 people that can fix the same problem, your value goes down. But to change your value, you can push it back up because you see a problem they don't see. Matter of fact, one of my recommendations to a guy that worked at a company, he said, I see that they're really having a problem with this particular thing. I said, go get that design, make it, since you're a metalsmith. I said, make the design, patent it, and then sell it to the company. See, you know the problem they have that they don't know. So then you come in and say, hey, I can fix your problem, make you $1 million, but I'm going to sell you this patent for $100,000. See, because he saw a problem he could fix.
You said earlier about one of the Jim Rohn's quotes, the value isn't in you particularly, it's what you bring to the hour. So that's a prime example of people who maybe in a particular job, they're getting paid what the job is worth, not necessarily what they're personally worth. But when they change what they bring to the hour, they're increasing their numbers. I love it.
And so one of the comments we had kind of talked about recently, too, was it's called factor difference parity. What are its differences? What's different about you as an employee? See, and lots of times, and one of my comments right under that, you will be amazed what you can put numbers to if you will just spend some time doing some research. You can actually determine what your marketable value is, which sometimes that might depress you, and I apologize on that side of it. But lots of times we can take our knowledge, our experience, our value, our knowledge, our expertise, our background, our economical, sociology, or sociological backgrounds. We can take those things and we can run all of them and say, hey, I should be making $1 million a year. Well, why ain't I? Why are my numbers a different number than what I'm making? And lots of times it's because you didn't value some knowledge, you didn't value some numbers, you didn't value some people, you didn't value your influence, you didn't value your time. It's because you didn't value any of these things. And just because others don't value you doesn't mean you can't value you. Because sometimes you're the only one that actually sees your value. And so I don't have a problem with that. But the question is, do you got some real research behind it? Or are you just saying, hey, I'm worth $1 million, and you can't prove it? How are you showing your differences? How are you showing, again, put that number to it. How are you showing that you're number one? I'm number one on the charts. Okay, well, you've never printed a CD. You know, it was prime example. I was talking to a friend of mine that was working for me at the time, and he had a cousin that was wanting to do some rap music. Now again, I'm not a musical artist at all. As a matter of fact, I'm tone deaf. And so this will make this comment that much more interesting. And I told him, I said, me not knowing anything about music, I can still tell you why he hasn't sold the amount of records he has. He said, well, why is that? I said, because he has missed the basic principles of music. He said, what do you mean? I said, for example, and I went and listened to some music, and I put it on there. Every music has a high and a low point when it's being sang. And it will consistently rotate in that pattern to keep the energy high. That's numbers. It's a mathematical, matter of fact, I just saw a little study like a week ago. Now, I said that almost 2 years ago. I saw a research paper on it about 3 days ago, and they said the mathematical way to write a producing record. Huh? You mean it's a number? Music's a number? You mean it has a flow? There's a certain rhythm to it that causes it to be a number one record? See, people so much smarter than me are still coming up with the same conclusion. They just don't know how they got there. The difference is I value things every day, and so I see patterns. It's ridiculous the amount of patterns I see in things. I don't have to go, okay, well, I'm the brightest guy in the box. And one of the comments I made to you about a week ago, I said, everybody keeps trying to reinvent the wheel. I said, what if we would stop reinventing the wheel and see which wheel rolls best in that environment and just use that one? At least then we could get to the same level of the hill they're at And if they're a $1 billion company and I'll use a similar wheel, maybe I can at least get to 250,000. It's not about me trying to hit their level because I'm not them. But at least I can get to a point that I haven't misplaced any of my resources and that I can get to the level that I feel that I can successfully get at.
Most people who are resistive to that, it's a pride issue.
Absolutely.
They think, I know better or my idea is better. We talk a lot about watching Marcus Lemonis. Most of the people, it's not that they don't have a great product or idea, but they are not willing to do it in the proven successful way because, oh, that means I have to be submissive to somebody else's proven ideas. What's the main point? I'm trying to get my product to market. I'm trying to get my idea out there. Don't get married to how you do it. You know, stay focused on the main thing. And the people that have the better people skills, the people that have that are more teachable, they're the ones that end up succeeding. The ones with the flaws and the pride and the people traits that they can't get along or learn, they're not going to make it. And I think, again, using this value concept, are you valuing the opinions or the information of the people who are trying to help you or have already been there? You can rapidly accelerate your path to success by being humble instead of being built up with pride.
Well, and the comment you just made, keep the main thing the main thing. Well, what did we start the whole thing with? There's only one. You've got to go back to what's the one. And so whenever we do stuff, you know, again, with Marcus Lemonis and those kind of things, the people are trying to sell a product. You know, one of them was Greek, Simple Greek. Well, they were stuck to a name. It's like, get rid of the name. Who cares? People don't come because of a name. People come because the food's great and they like Greek food and because it's good quality food. So let's keep the main thing, Greek food, healthy Greek food. That was the main thing. And so he did that and he opened like 20-something stores after that. Why? Because he kept the main thing the main thing. One, there is only one. So when you determine what that one thing is, a lot of the other stuff just becomes irrelevant. Well, I need to be the most popular. Why? That's not part of the one thing anymore. Well, I need to be the smartest guy in the group. That's not the one thing anymore. Because the one thing is that we do this or help people or make money or whatever the case is. So, again, it's not about what you're trying to go after. Is it cars, family, relationships, church, God? Let's keep the one thing the one thing. Let's keep the main thing the main thing. And when we have that attitude, it will always produce a different outlook because you won't care anymore. It's not about you. It's about producing a particular thing. And if it's not producing it, see, let's go back to the numbers. If you're not producing it, then you can look at the raw numbers that say, dude, you're not producing it. So you go back to the main thing. Okay, well, how do we produce it? Until you can do it 100% of the time. And that's what the goal is. Well, okay, so you can only do it 70% of the time. But you can consistently do it 70% of the time. And when you can consistently do it 70% of the time, then you're able to do it over and over and over and be more successful and do it consistently. Now, one of the stories I had brought up in the last session was my car insurance story. I knew I had never done car insurance. However, or for total, being able to total a car out because I totaled two cars in 30 days. And so when I did that, I sent it to the insurance company. And they told me, we know you bought it for, and again, I'm going to use these for general figures. We know you bought it for 10, and you say it's worth 12, but we're only going to give you 8. I says, no, you're going to give me 12. I said, no, we're not, because we're only going to cover X amount of liability. I said, no, you're supposed to, by law, give me X amount. And so I said, let me look at your appraisal. I said, okay, y'all missed a bunch of factors, and based on these factors, again, these numbers, based off of these numbers, based off of the external influences of where the cars were located, et cetera, I proved that the car was worth 12. And so they wrote me a check for $12,000. So likewise, what are you doing for your relationships? Are you setting your relationships up to succeed? What are the numbers? How did you set it up? What did you design it as? What were the priorities in your relationship? If you only gave your relationships a 10% chance of succeeding, there's a good chance they're not going to succeed very well. So let's go back to, how do you determine? How are you letting it succeed? What's your time and money in that particular area? What are you investing? If you're never investing in spending some money or reading a book or spending some time or going to a counselor and those kind of things, and you're in a marriage and you're not willing to listen to some side advice or some additional knowledge that you may not have to deal with the relationship in a more positive light, in a positive manner, if you're not looking at it from that side and you're never willing to listen, you're never willing to have any mentors, then you're biased in your opinion, and it will almost always give you a false perception with a false sense of value, which then has no real validity to it, and so therefore you almost will always lose it. And so just really to kind of wrap things up today, just really got one little question for you. Did you run the numbers? If you had run the numbers, would the outcome have been different for you on the front end? In other words, if you would have spent the time to look at it on the front end, would the outcome have been different? And so this gives us the approach, well, let's kind of be a little more specific on the front end to determine what our back end results are going to actually look like. The next thing is, how much did you make because you didn't? Or, I'm sorry, how much did you not make because you didn't run the numbers? And so, in other words, if I realized, and I mean, that's again something that Marcus Lemonis does, he'll say, okay, well, what's our margins? People process product. So in product, he goes into it, and he says, okay, well, this is how much it costs. And then he says, okay, well, let's look at the process and see if we can change any margins in the process, because then it'll change the cost of the product. And if we can change the cost of the product, then we increase our profit. And so if I had bothered to run the numbers to beginning, how much would I have made? And because I didn't run the numbers, how much did I lose? Then the next thing is, are there some things in that, if you had changed the priority of one, what the value would have been by changing its priority? And so, if you will change the priority of something and its value, how it's set up in the system, its process, the income, lots of times, what, people, product, process, right? People, process, product. That's his number one thing. That's his number one thing. He rates everything based off of that. So he looks at the people. Okay, we got the people. And almost the first thing he always attacks is the process. He always goes after the process. He says the process is broke. The process is broke. Almost never does he say the product's broke. He usually loves the product. Usually he's like, the product's great, but your process is crap, or the people got a bad attitude. So he always goes back to, are there some things that would change if we change the number one? And so the first thing he usually does is work on the people and the process. Because, see, that changed the whole side of it. And when you can change the side of it, of running your numbers, looking at it, getting real specific, getting into your weighted analysis, really just kind of going back to the thing of, did I actually assign a value to this? Did I write it down? Did I give in such a manner that I put it in writing to prove what I actually believe? If you haven't done that, then you haven't actually run your numbers yet.
We've taught a lot in the past on sales training. People are motivated by two main things. The potential for gain or the fear of loss. Again, a lot of people, they're probably not, they haven't even gotten to where they've analyzed this. They haven't ran their numbers. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know if you're winning or losing. Well, the big thing is people like myself, people like Sean, we have made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mentors, successful people, have made a lot of mistakes. So the key is, what mistakes can you avoid by having your numbers and then saying, oh, I don't need to keep doing that, or I need to avoid doing that because it will cost you either way. So I think that's one big thing I was kind of keying in on when you were talking about. It's not just we're trying to motivate you towards something positive, a gain, but also helping you to avoid loss or waste.
You only have 100-100, right? Out of 100%, you only have 100% out of 100%. And so lots of times people get a paycheck and they lose 50% of it just because of life. It's just gone. There's nothing you can do. So you only got 50% left. Well, you better think before you spend the other 50% if you want another 150%. And see, this is where numbers become such a big deal to me. I can spend $10 now and make $100 tomorrow, or I can spend $25 paying a bill off and get zero money tomorrow. Well, I started taking my $10, of $100, at least $50 for me to do something. If that's 50%, well, that's one-fifth of what I got left. Well, one-fifth of what I got left is a lot. And lots of times we'll go, oh, I can't afford that. So one of the first things I started teaching you, again, when we started coming back to this, you said, okay, I really want to look at some of this and how it works. So I said, well, I said, the question is, what's around you when you're walking around that you're not valuing? And so what, like a week later, you went to a consignment shop and got, how much were the shoes? You paid $20, how much were the shoes? $300 to $400 pair of shoes. So the shoes are $300 to $400 for $20. See, because I only had $50 left. Now, how many times does it take me to get $500 or $300 to $400 pair of shoes when I can do that for $25? And here was the thought comment I made to you. I said, and when you looked at $300 or $400, that was $300 or $400 which you could sell them for. Yep, that was retail. And so I think you looked at it and could actually sell them for $150 to $200 that day. In a sense, on eBay, they were being listed for that much money. So here's the question. How often do you got to do that to get out of debt if you only owe $5,000? And here's the point. What's the numbers? Does this work? It works every time. These are the type of things that are so simple that people walk by on a daily basis and don't pay attention to. It's available. It's right in front of them. And they go, oh, well, you know, I don't really want to waste the money on that. What, you're going to go buy them for $300? That's not a waste. When I can get them for $25 today? Well, they don't really fit me that well. So, who says you got to do it for you? And one of the first things I did, and it was actually funny, it was about two and a half, 3 years ago, I was talking to my wife. And she was doing quite a bit of eBay stuff, and I might have said this on a previous CD, but she was doing quite a bit of eBay stuff at the time. And she was doing about $200 a month. And she'd go garage selling and yard selling because that's her personal entertainment. And one of the things that I said in the first CD is I have no problem with my wife shopping. She can go spend as much money as she wants. And the reason why is because she understands these principles. So every time she goes shopping, she usually makes $100 to $200. Tell me how many wives that go do that. Most wives go spend $200 and they come back with a mad husband because they're $200 short. And there's nothing that the husband looks at and goes, hey, you're doing so good, baby. Please go shopping again. My wife goes shopping. I go, oh, cool. What'd you get? And do we have any room for it? And so she'll come back. She'll have a bunch of stuff. And so at the time, she was doing about $200 a month. And we were in a particular store. I think it was Rugged Warehouse one day. And she went into Rugged Warehouse and she saw some belts. And they were about $7 or $8 each. And she looked online right then while we're in the store. She does her research lots of times on the fly while we're in the store. She'll look at it because really, you know, everybody has a smartphone. And so there's absolutely no excuse for you not to make money. And so, and if not, I'm sure there's a stranger next to you that you could say, hey, can you look something on eBay? And they go, oh, sure. So it's not even the fact of that you have to have the resource, but do you pay attention to the resources available around you? And I just looked at her and I said, babe, I said, well, why don't you get it? She said, oh, well, I don't really like it. It's not my size. I said, so? You just told me you can make like $20 on each belt. She said, yeah. I said, why do you only buy it if you like it? She said, well, in case I don't like it, I'll just sell it and I'll make a little bit of money. I said, well, here's the thought. Why don't you do it on purpose? The next month, she went from $200 in sales to $800 in sales the next month. 50% profit ratio. So in 30 days, she went from 200 to 800 doing something she was already doing. I know this works. It works every single time you put it to work. Every single time. One of the examples I use, she went garage selling one day. She bought a Total Gym for $10, sold it the next day to the guy that was working for me for $200. That was the going price. That's a, I don't know, like a 1,000% return or something. It's crazy. Going from $10 to a $200 item. So that's almost, yeah, it's 1,900% or something return on investment. Don't tell me this can't work for you. Well, only got $5. Dude, you can be a millionaire. I know this works. Again, a penny that doubles every day for 30 days. So, for example, and I was talking to her the other day, she's like, oh my goodness, I bought these boots like 3 months ago for $25. They were new with the tags, and they finally sold 6 months later. I said, okay, well, how much? Oh, well, I sold them for $150. How many times do you have to do this, guys? Well, it sat on the thing for a month. Who cares? Is it going anywhere? How many times do you got to do it? I firmly believe in this. It's just about the numbers. It's not even about liking the product. Oh, and part of the story about my friend that made, $74,000 on his property, he didn't like either one of them. I don't really like the area. The condo isn't on the water. I can't see the water. It's in a community. I don't really like it. It's really on the bottom floor. It doesn't have a washer. It doesn't have this. It doesn't even have a good view. It sees a bunch of trees. It sees the back end of a pool. I don't really like it. But the numbers were great. And so, for example, the next one he's working on, he just bought a property for $160,000. He's got a contract on it right now. The neighbor's one sold for $240,000 the last 6 months. It's identical square footage. The difference is the floor plan is crap, and he's going to have to put probably $10,000 to $30,000 in. And guess what he said? I don't really like the house. What's this about, guys? He understands the principle of value. He calls me all the time. We talk all the time. He's been a good friend. So, but he understands one thing. He doesn't have to know everything. He doesn't really have to care. He doesn't want to care in a lot of aspects. He just wants to know, do the numbers line up? He said, because if the numbers line up, he said, and they work, he said, based off of how everybody's paying for it and the influences of the market and all those kind of things, if I can buy it for a low enough money, he says, who cares? Why? Because he has no pride or prejudice. He has no bias. It's about nothing more than what's the value of what he's selling. But if you don't bother to determine what the value of things are, you can't use these principles for you. You can't make $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000. This is why I am so passionate about this. This is why it's such a big deal to me. I just want people in just sometimes bad situations. And again, like I talked to the guy the other day, and he says, man, if I could just have another $50 or $100, it would change everything. Here's what I've learned. There is $50 to $100 being thrown away around you every single day, and you're walking right by it. And when we learn that, when we really learn that, it'll change everything. And in just a few years, I have now started several businesses. I'm teaching this material. I have different access to relationships and friends. My influence is different. How people perceive me is different. You walk in banks and they're all excited because you're Mr. Business Owner. Well, 5 years ago, I'd walk in the bank and they didn't know who I was. They didn't want nothing to do with me. All because of really, I just changed how I was valuing things. It's not that I changed, even though I've changed massive amounts, but because I changed how I valued people. Knowledge, numbers, time, and influence, because I changed how I valued my time, how I valued other people's time, how I value numbers, how I value knowledge, how I value influence. Because I changed those things, I get to see opportunities come. I get to see the influence change. I get to see people come and talk to me different. It's amazing when you really start to see this work on a consistent basis. And here's the thing. It doesn't take 10 years. I mean, I started talking to you, and a week later, you started seeing it. And lots of times, we brought up this in one of the first seminars. We forget these basic principles, and we go, I already know this. Do you? Do you really know? Or did you just think you knew? Are you really using this to its full potential to get you out of your situations? And so, if you're using them the way you're supposed to be using them, and you're doing it consistently, and you'll run the numbers, you'll look at it, you'll get specific about what you really believe, what's really valuable to you. What is really number one? If you'll really kind of come back and say, this is why I believe it, this is what I believe, and this is how I came up with it, you'll start to make progress in your life because you'll see a pattern. And anytime you see a pattern in your life, you have the ability to change its outcome and to change its influences and its factors on your life. And so therefore, it will revolutionize your life, your expectations, and just give you a whole new perspective. Because you'll go, hey, I can change it. It's all around me. And it's just going to allow me to do so many different things. Thanks again, guys. We're wrapping up the last session on numbers today. Thank you so much. I really hope to hear from you guys. Please visit us on Lost Art of Value. Also, you can visit us on Value to Victory. We want to hear your testimonials. We want to hear how this is helping you. We want to hear how this is changing your life, and just your personal story on how, when you heard this, just little ways that you saw that it caused a change in your life, a change in your perspective. that, and changes in your relationships with people or your time or your influences and just the outcomes that it has helped you in your life. And so we're just so proud of you guys for listening to this and taking hold of this. And we'll just so glad to talk to you soon and hear from you and your wonderful adventures.
Thank you, Sean. And that was excellent. We look forward to our next session, which will be on people. It's going to be great. And we'll sign off for now. God bless everybody.